Welcome to Post Status Draft, the official podcast for Post Status, a website with news and information for WordPress professionals. Today, Brian Richards and I are talking about learning WordPress and filling the gaps in the market for how to learn WordPress and where to go to learn WordPress. He runs WP Sessions, and he has an announcement to make today about a new way to learn WordPress, which is something that's been around, but he's bringing back to life. And we're going to talk about that, why he's doing it, kind of dig into this whole arena of learning WordPress. If you enjoy this podcast, you can get more quality news and analysis from the Post Status Club. Check out current club members, site partners, and join the club on our website at poststatus.com/club. Today, I'd like to feature one of our partners, Opt-in Monster. With Opt-in Monster, you can convert visitors into subscribers. They have tools to help manage abandonment and get people back to your website with email opt-ins, pop-ups, and all sorts of other high-quality tools to help you boost your sales and grow your email list. Thank you to Opt-in Monster for being a Post-Status partner, and go to optinmonster.com for learning more about them. Now, here's our show. Hey, Brian.
Hello, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Good. I am also doing well.
Good. So, like I said in the intro, and hot tip, we actually recorded this at the same time. So you know what I said in the intro. Normally I do two files there. So
yeah, I know. I was present for the whole experience.
Yeah, it's embarrassing trying to do a read in an intro. So now listeners know how that works. We won't talk about that in the future, but they got it this time. An insider's look at how a podcast is made.
I think I'm the one with the insider's look.
That's true. So like I said, we're going to talk about you a little bit this week and the learn WordPress market. And we did a little bit of this 10 weeks or so ago, introducing you and talking about your history. And then we spent some time on WP Sessions and whatnot. But we're going to dig in more today and talk about learning WordPress broadly and also how and why you're tackling this market and the surprise that you have up your sleeve. Do you want to save the surprise or you want to just get it out there?
Oh, I don't know. I like the way that you said it. A new way of learning. It's rather fortuitous timing because scientists are now talking about this new organ that they've discovered. Perhaps the largest organ in the human body. Have you seen any of the stories about it yet?
I have not.
Okay. Well, this is how we're going to start learning. Through this new, the new organ that they found is nothing to do with what we're talking about today. But now that we're here, I figure I should share some of the trivial knowledge with the rest of the world. There is this sort of sub-epidermal layer. So beneath our skin and between our skin and everything else, that is now being considered a new organ. And it's the same sort of material that exists between the inner lining and outer lining and most of our other organs in our body.
I have no idea what we're talking about and how we got here.
Talking about a new way of learning, Brian. Okay. I was originally inferring that this new organ is how we're going to learn things, but that was a veiled attempt to sort of distract and excite the mind. No. Yeah, so the surprise then, if you want to know more about the organ.
Time out. Is there really a new organ, like a sub-skin organ?
So this is going to be hotly debated, but yes, some scientists have spent the last several years trying to identify and classify this new organ, and it's just been announced broadly, courtesy of the mainstream media, this week. So I'm guessing there will be a lot of people who say this isn't an organ. This is just a different part of something or other. But it has a very fascinating story attached to it. And there have been a bunch of tweets about it. And I guess now that we've spent the last 5 minutes talking about it, we should probably include a link to it in our own show notes.
But
yeah, it's a real thing. it lends some explanation to why acupuncture works the way it does because of how it's interconnected throughout the entire body. So a lot of very cool stuff that would have otherwise been explained in some strange phenomenon. Also helps explain why cancer can spread the way that it spreads, where it starts out isolated in, say, your gallbladder and then moves to your liver and elsewhere. This organ, as they've described it, provides a logical pathway for that besides just, well, it moves with other cells for other reasons.
Wow. Okay, let's talk about learning WordPress.
Yeah. Now on to the real topic at hand. So
here's today's science trivia, the first 3 minutes of the draft podcast.
So I'm excited to announce that I am bringing back WordSesh after a multi-year hiatus. And I've been working on this for a bunch of weeks now and sort of teasing it here and there. And today I'm finally pulling the lid off and sharing at least some of the details with the world. I'm not going to talk about everything today. Don't want it to be all about me and the things that I'm doing. But WordSesh is coming back, and I have a lot of exciting things to share about that.
And people can go to wordsesh.com to learn that. So historically, this has been a 24-hour conference about learning WordPress, I guess with a developer focus, but not just for developers. Is it going to be a mix of developer stuff plus other things this time?
That is correct. So historically, let's talk about the history of WordSesh a little bit. Scott Bosgard kicked this off in 2012, I think. I should probably have been prepped with that specific date. But Scott Bosgard started this because he's crazy and awesome. He's crazy awesome. The very first one was April 2013, and it was a 24-hour broadcast featuring speakers from all around the world and designed to also accommodate attendees from all around the world. So it's a real, true global WordPress event. And there have been four. So there's one in April 2013, one in December of 2013. Then the next one was in December of 2014. And then the last one was August of 2016. So it'll be almost two full years by the time the next one rolls around, because it's coming in July. July 25th, 2016 is when the next one's going to happen. And there were some gaps there between the first one and the third one as well. Scott did an amazing job pulling together speakers from all around the world. One of them, I think it was WordSesh 2, actually had two separate tracks. So you could be in track one or track two, and there were speakers in both tracks for the entirety of the 24 hours that it was running. So there were way more than 48 presenters, because there were also that year tons of panel discussions. So there was so much content that was produced. And all of it exists in a recorded form on YouTube that's freely available to watch. And that will continue to be true. And in fact, there will be links to it on the WordSesh page when it officially launches, so that everybody can go back and watch all of this material. And like I said, Scott Bosgard did an incredible job putting that together. And I've been in touch with him. I helped organize, I think I was wrangling on WordSesh 2 and on WordSesh 3, because he obviously can't be manning the cameras and everything all 24 hours. Right. Though he did try. So I helped sort of coordinate with speakers and get different broadcasts started, along with a bunch of other awesome volunteers. But this year, I reached out to him to say, I've been thinking about putting together a virtual conference, and I finally want to do it. But I've always secretly had this fear that I would get halfway into planning one, and then you would announce the next WordSesh. So I want to know, is that going to happen? Would you like to collaborate? Would you like to pass the reins? Because I would love to keep making an event like this possible. And we worked out an arrangement, and he passed the reins. And so now I am going to be hopefully dutifully carrying the torch of WordSesh for many years into the future, so that it keeps happening. And one of the ways I'm going to ensure that is by making it a 12-hour event, because I am not crazy and I value sleeping. And so we're going to reduce it, but I feel like 12 hours still does a pretty good job of spanning all of the time zones. I know that one person who's opposite of when it's being broadcast is unlikely to watch all of it, but they'll be able to watch at least the beginning and end and miss the middle while they're sleeping, whereas other people might be able to watch the middle but miss the end and the beginning. So,
yeah,
there you go.
I think I like the 12-hour conference idea instead of the 24. I've always loved WordSesh, but I can't watch them all. You know,
Yeah, it's just, it's too hard. It's so much content, and to try and stay awake for all of it is challenging.
Yeah.
I think Scott, even try as he might, still caught like a couple hour nap each time he was broadcasting.
But the fun element, I guess, of doing it this way, where it's a marathon of sorts, is you really get the community excited, get them together. Historically, people have joined like a Slack room or some type of area where they can chat live, and it's just a lot of fun. So, do you have any teasers about what the talks might be about?
I do. Yeah. So starting next week, I'll be announcing each of the presenters. But for now, I can tell you that we've got topics focusing on security, e-commerce, Gutenberg, build tools, performance, freelancing and business advice, and long-term software maintenance, which is going to be a very big deal, or has started to become a very big deal for a lot of agencies, because WordPress is going to be turning 15 this summer.
I know, isn't that nuts?
That's so amazing.
Yeah, it's WordPress is up there, I think, in terms of software projects with active maintenance that are that old.
Yep.
So, yeah, or active maintenance and feature development. It's like it's in competition with, you know, operating systems and browsers.
Right? Yeah, it's
not a lot of web apps really in that realm. So yeah. It's super cool. And probably one of very few where you can maybe update from a version that's like 10 years old to the version today and probably not have any major issues.
Yeah, that still blows my mind. That was what actually cemented my decision to start working with WordPress in 2007, was this strong insistence on maintaining backwards compatibility. I felt a high degree of confidence that any organizing body that cared that much about making sure their stuff continued to work for older users, and that older users could find an upgrade path to the newest thing, would be one worth sticking with. Turns out I was right. Go
That's
me.
That's right. Go you. So tell me about why you've kind of committed your career to helping people learn WordPress specifically.
Yeah, sure. So we touched on this, like you said, I think when we were talking 10 weeks ago, whenever I first joined up on the podcast, it was largely motivated by selfish reasons, both because there were things that I wanted to learn that I would just like to pay somebody to teach me, which proved to be a very viable model for learning things, turns out. And then there was to eventually be able to provide enough training that someone could know all of the different things that I know. So I've got this nice cache of people that I can refer on projects. It was the hardest thing when I was doing, you know, independent contracting work, moving away from that into agency work, is finding, or even before that, just when I was doing it, there was only one of me. So I can only take on so much stuff. And people would ask, like, well, if you don't have time, is there someone that you can recommend for this? I'm like, well, I know different people who have different skill sets, but nobody that has the same sort of intersection of things that I know. And so I thought, well, if I can create this platform where I'm able to teach other people, then theoretically I could train up an unlimited number of individuals who can know all of the things that I know and operate in ways similar to how I operate. And I can essentially create a nice pipeline of people who can get the job done.
What kind of addressable market do you think there is for people looking to learn WordPress? Because I feel like most of that market is pretty silent. It's not like they're members of the community per se.
Oh, man. Boy, are you right. I know that there's a huge market of people out there, and I've been having the hardest time over these last several years trying to find them, because like me, they're very stubborn and just think, I'll figure this out on my own. I'm just going to muscle through and make it work. Much larger, I think, is the market of people who just want to learn how to work with WordPress, how to install certain plugins, how to configure them, how to maximize what they're doing, right? Here's how to build an e-commerce site from nothing. And I plan to produce content for them eventually. But in terms of the developers, Even the tiny market that I'm able to find is still huge compared to what I need to sustain my business. And there are tons of people who want to enter this market all the time, right? They're bank tellers who hate being bank tellers and want to learn about building apps and building websites. And there are lots of people who need websites but don't want to pay somebody to build one, so they want to figure out how to make it. And so it's largely that audience who is emerging into the market who is most susceptible to training. And unfortunately, at the moment, most of my training is for people who have already been in it, bless you, who need to need to level up their career because it's plateaued or stagnated for some reason. And it's always difficult convincing them that, yes, you do need this, and here's how I can help you get there.
I like it. Do you think that WordPress is big enough, or do you think there would ever be a value in expanding out a little bit, or not big enough, or maybe is it too specific? Like, because some of the tools we use in WordPress are getting more and more like just all the other tools, you know, like
right, web development. Right. Yeah. We're not in this isolated space. Yeah. I think about this a lot. And in fact, most of the stuff that I know that I need to teach isn't WordPress domain specific.
Right.
And so when I'm talking about pricing and contracting stuff, that's something that any independent contractor needs to understand and know, regardless of what tools they're using to build the website or sell their craft. And so I've pigeonholed myself a little bit, but I don't see that to be a problem. What I am able to offer that other people aren't so far is that I have the largest collection of WordPress related training, and anybody who wants to build and sell WordPress based sites is going to find value in all of my content. Whereas if they go somewhere else, there'll be different pockets of content that another provider might be offering that's valuable to them, but they're not going to find use out of all of the training that they have. Whereas mine is, I can become a one-stop shop for somebody, for instance.
Yeah.
And one thing that I've been wondering that maybe I could put back on you is it weird to come to a place like WP Sessions and learn about things that aren't WordPress, even though like WordPress is at the heart of everything that I do, but we might not be talking specifically about WordPress in a particular lesson. You know, does that seem weird to you?
No, because I think it's a little short-sighted to say we're just doing WordPress things, you know, because WordPress is a CMS that's encompasses a broad spectrum of you know, tooling and whatnot. So I think there's value in having it all, but catering it to the WordPress audience. And I think the less, you know, like take Headless WordPress, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
You can just teach the same style of principles for developing a website using output from a JSON API, which is perfectly applicable outside of WordPress. Like it can be any output from a JSON API, JSON data. But you're just saying, okay, well, this is how you would address it with WordPress itself. And that's where I get a little confused sometimes, is whether we're unnecessarily saying like, oh, this is for WordPress people, when really that's not a huge portion of what you're teaching. And there certainly are for some things, like WordPress as a framework with all its own functions and quirks and functionality. But there are general web development principles that you're teaching on a regular basis that are not available to an audience looking to learn general web development principles.
Yeah. And that's sort of where my mind has gone with a lot of things. And where I've tried to coach people when they're pitching their services, right? To not say that we're a WordPress agency or that I build WordPress sites. It's that we are solving problems, and the digital tools that we use happen to include WordPress. So it helps you reach a broader market when you're not just saying, yeah, I make WordPress sites. But often, even when that's what the customer is looking for, right, to say like, well, yes, we have lots of experience with WordPress. We've been core contributors. We've written this material. You can find all of this. But what we're here to do is help you solve these problems. So my approach with WP Sessions in that regard has been very similar. I provide training framed around WordPress, but that's not all that I'm doing. And to address your point, I think it's actually wise for us to sort of niche down, as the cool kids are saying, and provide context around, well, here's how we're doing this with WordPress. So even though, right, headless WordPress, even working with the WordPress REST API can be seen as working with any API. Ours just happens to be backed by WordPress. What people are looking for in the moment is contextualized learning. How do I do this with specifically the WordPress API? And if we're just talking about API integration in general, someone is unlikely to find that training resource. Similarly, it gives someone grounding for experimentation. So they can come and say, okay, I'm going to play with this thing. They're working with WordPress. Here are the tools that they're using. And now I can experiment as well. In my younger years, I was really into Photoshop tutorials. I found Photoshop in 98, I think. Photoshop 4.0 was where I started out.
Yep.
Before Photoshop supported drop shadows as a native feature, to give you an idea.
Which, let's be honest, it was a better time. Drop shadows, yeah. Drop shadows were highly abused.
They were so highly abused. And so I would scoop up every Photoshop tutorial that I could, and I would follow them precisely, and the output of my design would match the sample graphic that they used at the beginning of the tutorial perfectly, right? It's just like they were showing me how to be a machine and follow these rote processes. But I was learning so many techniques. I was learning about lighting techniques and composition, color theory, and all of these things along the way. I didn't quite recognize it at the time. I was just looking for a tutorial on how to do blank effect with text. But through that, I was learning how to use the tool itself and how to do other things besides just the design that they were showing off. And I would probably never have turned into a tutorial that was like, here's how the blur tool works in Photoshop, and here's how to create a drop shadow and all the different settings that are pertain to that. That's a very dry and boring way to introduce something. But to say, here we're going to make blank, and along the way you're going to learn how the drop shadow tool works and all of these things, was a very convenient hook for me to sort of introduce me to the tools and the techniques and everything else along the way.
Do you think that visual learning and code is important?
I do. Sorry, I paused there because you're on my end came through just a little bit choppy. I think that visual learning is important in a lot of things, but I don't think it's the end all be all. Is there a deeper direction you want to go in there? Because I could go a million different directions and take
just
tangents.
I'm just curious because, I like video for a lot of things, especially brand new things. But if I'm already familiar with a technology, sometimes I just want the text to be able to snag it faster, if that makes sense.
Bingo. Yes, I feel the same way. And I'm actually, spoiler, trying to adjust that and accommodate that on WP Sessions. All of my videos have been being transcribed and captioned, and I'm making it so that people can jump straight to whatever captioned portion they want. Or they could just read the transcript and not watch the video at all, in addition to being able to change the speed of the videos. But I'm the same way as you. Sometimes I just want, like, just show me the code sample and I'll read it and figure it out myself. Sometimes I'm like, okay, show me a code sample, but give me a bulleted outline of here's what it's doing. And sometimes I need, like, the whole narrative, right? I need to understand the context of the problem and why it's being solved in a certain way or how the technology works, not just here's the piece of tech you need to use. And I think this is true for everybody, regardless of what it is you're trying to learn, right? We all have different learning styles and ways that we consume information the best, or so we're taught. In my experience, we actually all learn the best in the same way. It just depends on how much of a thing we're trying to learn. So
yeah,
whether it's
broad or specific, I guess, as well.
Exactly. And so the context of what we're learning shapes the medium by which we would prefer to learn it. So sometimes video is best, and video now is just a stand-in for learning in person, having somebody show you the thing. So I guess having somebody demonstrate to you, reading what the technique is or reading about the thing via text, or trying it yourself, right? Tactile learning, experiencing what you're learning. And each of these plays a significant role in how we learn and how well we retain what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to incorporate each of them at the different stages of what it is. Like you said, whether we're trying to learn something broadly or trying to learn something very specific. And then from there, whether we're trying to fully understand it or whether we're just trying to figure out how can I incorporate this now? Right? There's tons of tools that I use that I have no idea how they work, like a camera. I understand better than most how a camera works at a physical level of how the individual photons of light are being captured.
I don't know if you know, but I have a degree in this.
Yeah. very nice. But even with that, like, I couldn't begin to describe to you how the electronic components of a digital camera work. No idea. And I don't need to know that to know that if I press this button, it captures an image that I can then share with the world. So having someone describe to me in punishingly intricate amounts of detail the electrical engineering of a digital camera is of very little value to me when I want to know how should I approach the lighting for this portrait. Similarly, I don't need to know every underlying detail of how a server works in order to understand that if I hit this particular URL, the API is going to feed to me this data that I can use in the system. So there's a very long-winded way of saying, I think we need varying degrees of detail as we're learning that matches how much we need to understand about the thing we're learning.
Yeah. I think that's a really good point. And I'm so conflicted when I'm learning things, and it's been a while since I really dug hard into learning WordPress. But I think these days when I'm learning stuff that's admittedly a little less technical, like in terms of I'm not coding, like I'm not typing mm-hmm. code while I'm learning, but I love the video format. So I want to bring this back to WordSesh and the marathon component. And people do seem to be drawn, obviously, to like conferences and that form of in-person learning. What do you think is the big benefit of a virtual conference and visual learning, where you have a screencast plus the presenter's face and all that stuff? And like, do you think there's a special blend there for online conference?
I do, and this sort of brings us back full circle, even to why I started WP Sessions. I like conferences as a general rule because they provide an opportunity to learn about a variety of things. So I can sort of sit in on a topic that I might be interested in or that I've vaguely heard of but don't know much about, and then find out right away, am I actually interested in this or not?
Yeah, so you can basically bail if you're not interested.
Right. Like, oh, no, this isn't interesting to me at all. I'm going to go out and do something else. And you can do that, right? Like the hallway track at a physical conference is my favorite place to spend time because I'm interacting with lots of people who have lots of different perspectives on lots of different things, but then being able to jump straight into a session and go like, oh, this isn't what I thought at all. I need to stay here and listen to more of this. Or this isn't what I thought at all. I'm not interested in this. I'm out. Is way better, in my opinion, than saying like, well, I'm going to invest in all of these courses and hopefully they're all useful to me and things that I want to know more about. Or I'm going to buy this book and read all about it and go, oh, no, that's not what I wanted at all. A virtual conference is even better for me because it is far, far less expensive to attend. Because even if we take a WordCamp, for instance, where tickets are $20 to $40, depending on whether they're providing meals or not, right? That's stupid cheap for a full day or two full days of learning. But
it's even more getting there.
Right. Unless the camp is right in your own city, you have to spend money getting there on gas and hotels, on meals and all of these things, so that even this $40 conference, even one that's right 2 hours away where you're likely to stay nearby, is probably going to cost you a few hundred dollars. Mm-hmm. Not to mention costing, you know, days of your life to attend it, which are, in my opinion, worth it most of the time. But there are all of these considerations that you have to take to that amount to the total cost of the event. Whereas with a virtual event, you can attend anywhere that's convenient from you, convenient for you, and you don't necessarily have to watch it all in one shot because it's being recorded in real time as it's being broadcast. You have an assurance that the recording is going to be available to you immediately afterwards. And so you can watch maybe a couple of sessions while they're live and then watch the rest of them via the recording at a time that's convenient to you. So you have location independence and time independence, and a huge reduction in cost because you're not buying plane tickets, meals, hotels, et cetera.
When you were thinking so about this from a business perspective, were you all at all thinking about whether this could take away from people's desire to sign up for WP sessions because they're getting, you know, value directly out of this? Or do you think it'll be a lead in to people wanting to dig deeper with WP sessions?
I think it's going to be a really good lead in for people who haven't yet heard of WP sessions, but have heard of WordSesh, or for people who have heard of neither, but are interested in attending this virtual conference. Likely, if you're interested in one, you're definitely interested in both, in my opinion. And now having 5 years experience behind me running WP sessions, I feel confident that I can actually execute on WordSesh in a way that makes it valuable to everybody. So I've spent time curating the speakers. I handpicked each of these people because I felt that they had the best perspective to present on each of the topics that I wanted to hit, right? I surveyed my audience at the beginning of the year and asked them, what kinds of things do you actually want to learn this year? And then I went out and I found people to speak on those specific topics, the people who I think are best positioned right now to share their perspective on those. So,
and this is obviously, people are going to get whatever, 30 minutes, maybe 45 minutes on WP or on WordSesh, and WP sessions sometimes digs in quite a bit beyond that on whatever the topic is.
Exactly. Yeah. So the biggest benefit that we talked about with the conference is that you can sort of informally sample a bunch of different topics and find out what's most useful to you. But the downside, right, the drawback is that the speakers only have 30 to 40 minutes to really drill in, which is not enough time to get more than surface deep on a lot of topics. Now, sometimes they do have topics that, like, let's take a deep dive and walk through this. But you can only focus on that one specific aspect of it and not the rest of the things that are worth knowing. And so with WordSesh, we're going to have a bit of a split between those, but it's mostly going to be surface level, highly informative on a bunch of different topics. And then we can drill in further wherever somebody wants to learn on focused lessons on WP sessions, which I'm excited about. Cool. And then also from a business perspective, hosting a virtual conference is way less expensive than hosting a physical conference. My only expenses are paying for my speakers, are the event venue itself, which I have to tell you, paying even $250 for a one-day virtual event, is a far cry from paying multiple tens of thousands of dollars for an actual conference venue.
When you say virtual venue, what does that mean?
The medium by which I'm able to broadcast the video and attendees are able to participate in live chat, asking questions, being polled, etc. All of that has to be hosted somewhere. And at the moment, I'm leaning very heavily towards Crowdcast, which is a service that I learned about courtesy of WordSesh, as a matter of fact, a bunch of years ago. And they've spent a lot of time producing a platform that is pretty darn awesome in terms of making it easy for the speakers and viewers to interact with one another, both via chat, via polls, via questions. It's a lot of really cool stuff that it's going to provide. And at a fraction of the cost of what it would be to bring all of these people together in a physical venue. Pretty
cool. I like it. So what do you, I mean, we've been a little introspective on ourselves and, you know, what we think about learning and whatnot, but what do you want people to take away leading into the first or the next word session? Actually, when is it? We didn't go over that.
Yeah, so I mentioned it very briefly as a throwaway there. It's going to be, no, you're fine. July 25, 2018 is when it's going to happen. And it will be running in Eastern time because that's where I am to operate it. Chat and stuff will kick off at, I think, 8 a.m. Eastern. Opening remarks in the first session kick off at 9 a.m. Eastern. And then it'll end right around 8 p.m. Eastern. And we'll have breaks throughout the day so people can actually get up and leave their computer for a minute, you know, get drinks, use the bathroom, make a lunch.
Perfect.
Very excited about that. Before we jump back to talking about some other WordPress and learning gaps and stuff, you want to talk a bit more about our friends over at Optin Monster?
So I want to thank Optin Monster for being a partner in this episode and of Post Status. Optin Monster, of course, makes powerful conversation optimization toolkits to grow your email list and boost your sales. So they actually have a lot of features. Some people may think, you know, it's just pop-ups or whatever, but actually, Brian, you've used it in a different way, right?
I have, yeah. So I expect that most of our audience are developers or agency owners or developer-minded. They hate marketing in any way, shape, or form, which is funny because we all need to market ourselves extensively to even have a job or get jobs. And so they may have discounted what Optin Monster can do as straight up pop-ups, but it has so many different features. One that I really like, actually, they call it Monster Links. So when you're offering some sort of tangible freebie on your site, an ebook for download, for instance, rather than showing an opt-in form and saying, hey, join my mailing list and you'll get this ebook, you can say, click this button to download the ebook. And when they click the button, they're then shown the opt-in form saying, please give me your email address and you can start the download immediately. What they found is people are more likely to complete the action of opting in because they've already began the action of saying, I want this download. Whereas if you just have a form casually on your page, they'll ignore it entirely,
really cool.
Perhaps. Yeah, Optin Monster isn't just pop-ups that annoy you. In fact, that's a very small portion
and they have exit intent that makes it to where if a website is annoying you with a pop-up by making it happen, you know, as soon as you land on the page or something like that, that's the website owner choosing to do that because actually Optin Monster has exit intent that doesn't pull the pop-up to you until you've read through the page or you're going to close the page out. It detects those things and then brings the pop-up in. They also have a drag and drop builder and all sorts of like targeting you can do so that you don't hit people with the pop-up every time they come to the site. All these things that make it not only a better user experience, but more likely for people to subscribe to your list. And that's the goal, you know, we're looking to convert our visitors. So Optin Monster does a great job of that. And I'm happy to have them as a post status partner. Go to optinmonster.com to check them out. And thank you to Optin Monster for being a partner.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, definitely don't blame the tool for a bunch of people masquerading as marketers misusing the technology. That'd be like blaming WordPress for forming a botnet because people didn't update their sites.
Yep. So what's next on our talking agenda? We got a few minutes left.
Yeah, we do have a few minutes. So we were originally saying that we would look a bit more broadly at learning in WordPress or learning in general. And we touched on those things a bit. And you sort of shared briefly your own foray into learning things. So I was wondering if you could talk a bit more about sort of maybe where you see gaps in your own knowledge or problems that you've found with just learning things in general inside of our industry.
Yeah, I think one of the things I've run into is WordPress has gotten more complex and powerful in terms of, like, you know, development's not just creating templates for a theme or like doing some PHP functionality inside of a plugin. Now you've got not only JavaScript, but you've got sometimes you're working with Backbone. Sometimes you're working with plugins that are using React. You're working with all sorts of different APIs. You may be integrating with the REST API. And for me, just kind of merging these things together and trying to decide if I'm building a feature for a website, which is typically what I'm doing these days. I'm not building client work. It's usually I want to build something for my website. So here's what I'm going to try to build, whatever. And you're trying to figure out, like, okay, well, where am I going to integrate these various things? And what do I need to do to accomplish my end goal? And considering the data structure. So, like, should these things be custom content types or use their own database table? How do I want to query this data and filter it? Does the REST API support that? Like, all these questions get more and more complex the more WordPress kind of offers these powerful tools. And just bringing all that together is still a challenge for me because I'm not in code every day anymore, you know?
Yeah. What would you like to see to exist to help?
I think
that?
What I would like to see is not just saying how to use some API, but actually to say, here's a sample project and we're going to build it out and we're going to pull together all sorts of different tools in WordPress, all the things that you may consider, and almost build it out like you're building a new plugin or something. And they can be relatively simple. It doesn't have to be super complicated, but essentially just showing how you do things and to see what that looks like and as an end product. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Some more topic or rather project specific,
yes,
tutorials.
Rather than how to use XYZ API or whatever.
Right. Here's how we get posts from the REST API. Cool. Why? Give me some context for why I might want to use this. Oh, well, maybe you want to create a search suggestion, you know, a type of head search kind of feature. You can use the REST API for that. Maybe you want to create an infinite scrolling kind of site.
Yeah, take something specific like that. And the two that you just mentioned, it's not like they're overly complex, you know, a search recommendation, infinite scrolling. Maybe it could be a simplified related posts type of widget where you're creating an admin interface for maybe manually selecting related posts. You're also creating a front end interface. You don't necessarily have to do things like, here's all these filters you can do and things that a distributed plugin might have. But for custom development, here's the various things I'm interacting with to wrangle something. And here's how I'm thinking about how it'll interact with caching. Like, building something is one thing, but then you have, like, how is this going to respond in various environments? And do I need to bypass caching? And what kind of considerations are there for that? I just have a lot of those types of questions when I'm building my own stuff these days. And I would like to see those types of answers.
I like that. So for all of you who are listening who want to help with this problem, I suggest, one, helping continue to contribute towards making the developer resources on .org more informed. Every time you find a gap in there, please take some time to contribute an example or a better explanation of things. That's what made the codex so great in the first place. And then two, write about what you're doing. Make blog posts.
That's right.
Share them with the world.
I love people that are willing to blog about what they're building. And you know, you just recently had Wes Boss on WP Sessions. And I think he does a great job because when he says, here's an introduction to React, he's actually not just doing a walkthrough of everything React does. He's got a sample. Yeah,
right. Here are all the features.
A sample application. So he says, we're going to build this fish menu and the ability to order fish off the fish menu. And that's a React app that's all encompassing. And here's the finished app. And then each lesson is a step along this pathway of building the fish app. And I think doing it that way is just really helpful for me to understand things.
Bingo. And that drives back to it. We were talking about earlier with the different ways in which we learn. This provides a real tactile experience, right? My favorite programming book so far, there's two. There's one which is Clean Code by Bob Martin, which fundamentally changed how I approached writing code. But then the other is Eloquent JavaScript. And what I liked most about Eloquent JavaScript is that each chapter ends with coding projects. And they start out really simple and rudimentary, as you would expect. And then they build on each other as the book progresses. So something that you build at the end of chapter one, for instance, you might reinterpret and build differently in chapter three, or you might expand on and add another feature to it. And I thought this was huge because you can spend, you know, the chapter learning about some technology or approach, and then you can spend time actually experimenting with that in a controlled environment to make sure you understand how it works and why you would use it in that way.
Yeah, I love stuff like that.
So
we'd love to hear from listeners about how you like to learn. both Brian and I provide content materials, and I don't do as much learning material as you do, but both of us would love to hear from people about what they want to see, how they find value in learning. So, you know, shoot us a message and tell us about how you like to learn. We'd love to hear from listeners to get some ideas about what we can do and create for the community ourselves. So this was a pretty introspective episode, but people could just sit in on one of our conversations. That's what this was. And me and Brian have these types of conversations often. So,
in fact, we had a full one just like this in the hour preceding us recording this episode.
So thank you, everyone, for joining us, and we will catch you on the next episode of Post Status Draft. Be sure to check out wordsesh.com and wpsessions.com and poststatus.com/club, and we'll talk to you later.
Bye, everybody.